Welcome to The Air Up There, a podcast about the wide, wide world of aviation. This is a podcast for everyone who loves everything that flies, including people like me, an aviation geek. I'm John Croft.
And I'm Allison Duquette. John, I'm really excited about today's episode because we're talking about young people who want to become pilots, a pilot just like you. And you interviewed a few people for today's show, including TJ Kim, a 16-year-old student pilot who's doing something sort of unusual as part of his flight training.
And that's putting it mildly, Allison. It's very unusual and it's very cool. And TJ's a young guy. Like you said, he recently finished up his sophomore year in high school. And like many other students across the country, his classes and activities have moved online as COVID-19 started to impact the world.
And what's really neat is that he wanted to do something to help.
Exactly. So TJ, who happens to be a student pilot, worked with his dad and his instructor to do something really cool, to fly PPE and other supplies to hospitals in rural Virginia. He's calling it Operation SOS, Supplies Over Skies.
That's awesome. Let's play this interview. I love this story.
Ever since I was 9 years old, my dream has been to attend the Naval Academy and become a fighter pilot. And a little over a year ago, when I turned 15, my dad got me a Discovery flight for my birthday. It's where you go up with a certified flight instructor and kind of get a feel for what it's like to fly an aircraft. And after that first flight, I was hooked and I couldn't wait to get back up in the air again. And flying has been my passion ever since.
Tell me about that first flight everybody remembers there. What kind of aircraft and where did you go?
I fly and train out of Leesburg Executive Airport. It was with my flight instructor, Dave Powell, and we went up in a Cessna 172, and he did most of the controls because obviously I'd never flown before. But once I got up there, he gave me the controls a little bit, and he let me fly it around and let me get a feel for like what flying is like and just really the appeal of it. And during that flight, I couldn't stop thinking like, this is incredible. This is so amazing. This is like what I want to do with my life. And so when we came back down, my parents signed me up for flight school that day.
Oh, wow. But you're a sophomore in high school right now. And, you know, we've seen the articles. Everyone's seen the articles, flying medical supplies. Where did that idea come from? And how did you, there's a lot of ways to do that, but you linked it to your flight training. How did that come about?
Well, I guess it all started when, due to coronavirus, my school landed, moved into distance learning. And then our lacrosse season got canceled as well. And all I had left was my flight training. Community service is something that I take very seriously. It's also very heavily emphasized at Landon. So I talked to my dad about ways I could continue my flight training progression while serving the community at the same time. And that's how we came up with Operation SOS, meaning Supplies Over the Skies. The response from my friends has been incredible. And just all of the support that I've been getting and being able to fly medical supplies and just serve the community is something that's really been the driving force.
So did you collect supplies or did someone give you the supplies and you flew them over there?
So in the beginning, me and my dad went out locally, and we still do, just sourcing supplies, getting whatever we can. And then I guess more recently when the story started breaking bigger, we've received a lot of emails and packages from friends who want to donate stuff that they can source in their own neighborhoods. We've been gathering supplies in a lot of different ways, but it's really due to the support of the community that we're able to get the supplies.
How did you decide where to take the supplies and where did you find the local airport?
Me and my dad did a little bit of research, and we found that there are 7 critical access hospitals throughout Virginia, and they're all in really rural areas. And so that's when I really wanted to make the mission about serving rural hospitals. And after we flew down to Luray for the first time, we met a couple hospital workers from there to pick up the supplies. We chatted a little bit, and they just were so grateful, and I could tell how much it meant to them. And they told us that the rural hospitals are very overlooked, and because, you know, the big city hospitals are getting all the attention. They're the ones where everyone wants to donate to. And so they've kind of felt left out. And that reception that I've been getting ever since that first flight, it's been at every single airport. And it just shows the impact that you can have on these little rural hospitals. It worked out that all these rural places are over 50 miles from Leesburg. So I've been able to get a good progression in my cross-country stage of flight.
And so your instructor is going with you as a dual cross-country for these?
Yes, I fly under dual instruction. We're really careful. We pay attention to all the health guidelines, but every time I fly, it is considered a medical flight.
Well, speaking of flight training, I assume you're getting a private, or are you getting a... Which license are you pursuing?
Well, looking forward to getting my private pilot's license next year when I turn 17. That's what I've been training for. So I'm just progressing through the training and doing everything possible. And actually, before this whole coronavirus incident, we were preparing for me to solo for the first time. The whole timeline and schedule got messed up. So instead, we decided to switch to cross country because it fit with the whole Operation SOS so well. And so we've kind of put a hold on solo training. Yeah, the plan is once I turn 17 to take that check ride, and hopefully I'll be ready by then.
Well, during those flights, you said you've done six so far with a seventh Monday. Anything really cool that happened? Anything that was memorable in terms of Operation SOS or just flying in general? What sticks in your memory?
The whole cross-country flights have been really new. Like, learning how to plan them was very fun to learn. And just flying everywhere, like all over Virginia. I got to go to Blacksburg Airport down by in Virginia Tech, and that's really Southwest Virginia. Just being able to go out there and explore different places of my home state has been really cool. I went to Topping, Virginia once on the East Coast. I got to fly over water in the Chesapeake Bay. That was really cool. Flying over mountains, learning about different weather patterns too with my flight instructor, he's really taught me a lot. And since we have a lot of time during the cross-country flights, we're able to do a little bit of what could be considered like ground training, like learning about weather patterns, wind patterns, irregular runways and stuff like that. But we're able to do that in the air. So very productive flights, just getting to learn more about aviation as a whole.
What's been for you the most rewarding part of these flights?
I would say just being able to help others, like seeing the hospital workers when we land. When we went to Topping, Virginia, Bon Secours, they brought out like 15 people with like signs and balloons, and when I landed, the reception has been crazy every time, and you just see the appreciation from the hospital workers, and that is what really gives me the most joy doing these flights.
Let me move into a little bit of your aspirations for aviation. So you talked about the Naval Academy. What spawned your interest in being a fighter pilot? Did you see an air show or something that captured your imagination, or what was it?
I guess it's started with my dad. My dad wanted to be a fighter pilot, but he couldn't because of his eyesight. And he let me know from when I was really young, like that's what he wanted to do, but he couldn't, unfortunately. So it was always kind of in the back of my mind. And I see like TV programs. There was this one that I used to watch called Dogfights, old show on History Channel, where they talk about like specific battles and they bring in the pilots that were in those battles and they kind of do like an interview documentary replay kind of show, and that really sparked my interest when I was little. After that, watching that show a couple times, my parents took me to the Naval Academy for a tour because it was something my dad always wanted to do, and when he saw that it was something that I might be able to do, it really excited the both of us. Ever since then, I've wanted to go to the Naval Academy, wanted to fly jets off a carrier, and it's just a dream that I'm working towards.
Both of my bosses, the administrator and the deputy administrator, both went to the Air Force Academy. Why not the Air Force?
Oh, I don't know. It's maybe partly because of my dad. Just flying off carriers seems cooler than flying off land, maybe.
I have to agree with you there on the carriers. There can't be anything cooler than that, especially at night. It's good for you for pushing for that. Getting the perspective of a pilot, seeing things the way the pilots see them, how do you feel like that gives a person an edge in life in general? Or do you feel like it gives you an edge or could give you an edge?
Well, there are definitely certain skills that I've been able to work on just due to the nature of piloting, like problem solving. We run into a lot of issues up in the air, weather permitting. You know, it's just being able to work around those problems and still complete the mission. And that's something I've been able to learn even more through doing these cross-country flights is one time, just last week, we were planning to fly down to Blacksburg again. And we checked the NOTAMs that day and it said that runway was closed. So we had to contact the hospital and switch airports and just working through all these little problems that come up when you're flying and working through the problems and still being able to get the mission done. That's something very crucial that I've learned through this training.
When you think about where you'll be in 10 years, what do you think about?
Hopefully somewhere in the Pacific Ocean, flying a F-35 off a carrier. It's been the end goal ever since I was 9, and hopefully I can just make that dream turn into reality.
Well, we hope you get there. It's been really cool talking to you.
Okay, John, that was really cool. One of the things that really shines through in your conversation is how much TJ has learned through his flight training. He's clearly learning how to fly an airplane well, but he was speaking about working through problems that come up. I've got to say, those really seem like life skills to me.
I completely agree. And when I spoke with TJ's instructor, Bobby Chahal, he echoed a lot of the same sentiments. Bobby is an instructor at Aero Elite in Leesburg, Virginia. He's been flying alongside TJ for all the Operation SOS flights. So tell me about when you met TJ, and, you know, was he typical of the students you have? Was he different, or tell us about that?
So actually, TJ was a student of my colleague, Dave Powell. Dave Powell and TJ got the Operation SOS started with their first flight out to Luray Airport in a rural part of Virginia. Dave could no longer fly because of coronavirus crisis and other extenuating circumstances. So I filled in for TJ, and I've been flying subsequently since then. I remember the first time when I linked up with Dave, he had told me about the idea, and I thought it was a phenomenal idea. Great idea using GA aircraft as a tool during this crisis, as it was evolving, the very beginning of it. I thought it was amazing that one of our students thought to do this. And at that time, I didn't know of TJ's background, that he was just a 16-year-old student. And I was quite surprised that TJ was the brains behind this operation when I learned he was 16 years old. I think that's very respectable, very remarkable, very applaudable. Not even some of us older guys, we thought we would be thinking to do that. And here we are, flight instructors, chief flight instructors, flight school owners. None of us thought about doing that. So huge shout out to TJ for that.
One of the important things you learn pretty quickly is the importance of risk management, which comes down to planning and, more importantly, knowing when to change a plan or call off a flight. You know, once people get moving down a path, it's just in our nature, especially as pilots, to want to keep going down that path. When you're flying, though, you have to put that instinct in check. It's really important to keep those plans flexible so that you're doing everything as safely as possible.
We make necessary adjustments as we need based on weather. We try to see if we can forecast as close as 2 days. That's when we get a near-term accurate forecast, especially with the seasonal changes. Everyone is very flexible, parties departing, parties on the ground, for shifting a schedule if we need to be, for weather, aircraft availability, for whatever reason. One of my concerns behind it is teaching a young aviator and just even a young, upcoming private pilot is not to get pressured just because we are doing some mission-based flying. It's one of our risk factors. We don't want to get the get-there-itis syndrome. Everyone has been very flexible on that part, so that has never been the case at all. So we actually do scrub our flights if we need to based on weather. Everyone is very flexible. TJ's father does the coordination with hospital on the ground and helping arranging times. That's a little bit of behind the scenes of what's going on there.
What's been your longest flight so far in terms of distance?
Our longest flight for our mission so far has been to Blacksburg Airport. That's gone about, or one leg was coming up on about 2 hours, 20 minutes. We had some stronger headwinds that day. So 2 hours, 20 minutes round trip, that was looking like about, actually we hit 4 hours exactly on the hub. So it was quite a long flight day. I think we were both a little bit tired after that one.
Does it feel pretty good to contribute that way? Most of us, you know, are used to doing the $100 hamburger, but you're actually helping the cause here.
Absolutely. I never would have imagined that, first of all, we'd be in this pandemic if you would have asked me a few months ago. Second of all, I never thought I would be helping make a difference with GA or any form of aviation for that particular matter. So it's definitely a great thing that's going on. Honored to be working with TJ and helping him achieve his goals.
Very cool. And one of the big pushes we have in general at the FAA is trying to get, in aerospace in general, trying to get the next generation interested in flying in aerospace. And we don't see a lot of kids really that have the interest, but you had it yourself, obviously, and I guess you see that in TJ. Do you see it in many other kids?
That's a very good question. I just don't think aviation is really explored at too much around schools. It was interesting, me growing up too, as a child, when I went to high school, we didn't really have any aviation programs. I'm working with some younger kids now in our surrounding counties, and it's really great to hear now they actually do have aviation curriculum for their private pilot. Actually a ground school, after they complete that class in their high school, it's offered. They get signed off for their written test. So it's really remarkable how much has changed, but I think we still do have a long ways to go. I think it's not really talked about much, but I think we all need to do our part in outreaching out to the community, outreaching out to the students. That's one of the ways that I got involved. It was as simple as someone in, I believe, second grade pilot came in, United Airlines pilot, a big player in our community over here. He came in, he talked about his job. And then fast forward about fifth grade at a career day, United Airlines pilot once again came in. He talked about his career and he didn't probably get that much attention as some of the other jobs, like the doctors or even a lawyer. I definitely think that is a huge step getting forward of having pilots out there reaching out to the community.
We hear that same message a lot in the aviation world, right? Lots of people have stories like Bobby's where they can point to that one person or that one experience that got them really excited about aviation. I think for a lot of kids, they just need someone to show them that it's possible. And that's a huge part of the Experimental Aircraft Association's Young Eagles program. Let's play some of your interview with Brian Olina, the Young Eagles program manager at EAA.
A little history about the program for Young Eagles. It began in 1992 at what was then called Oshkosh. It's now called Air Venture. And our goal was to give 1 million flights to young people by the year 2003, which was the 100th anniversary of flight. We met that goal and had more than 1 million people, kids, flown by 2003. And to date, we're a little over 2.2 million kids flown. It's all been done by volunteer pilots. Got 50,000 plus pilots over the years that have flown, although traditionally 4,500 to 5,000 pilots a year fly the kids. And so it's a volunteer program. EAA supports it and provides insurance for the pilots and paperwork and that type of stuff. But the volunteer pilots at our 900 chapters around the country and some individual EAA member pilots are our main contributor to the program.
Well, who would you say is your perfect Young Eagles candidate?
Well, I like to think anybody. You never know who this is going to appeal to. We cast a wide net. You know, we're looking for kids 8 through 17. I would say a sweet spot's probably that 14 plus age for kids that might be interested in learning to fly.
And so I'm curious, what about Young Eagles has made it so successful? What does it do for kids that really they're not getting elsewhere?
I think first off, it's in their community. It's grassroots. It's done by our pilots, volunteer EA member pilots who do it because of the love of it. We don't reimburse them for fuel. We don't reimburse them for their aircraft time. They do this because they love it. And so they're sharing their love and their joy of aviation. It's why I became a pilot. I love it. It's why I became a flight instructor. I enjoy teaching. A lot of our members, whether flight instructors or not, and a sport pilot can give one of these, a recreational pilot, private pilot, anybody that meets the FAA guidelines of that certificate can certainly give a flight. And by sharing it in their local community through our almost 900 plus chapters, it puts it in a level where they can understand it. It's someone that they may know in their community, maybe giving them a flight, which appeals to a lot of people.
Okay, let's take a quick break. We put safety first here at the FAA, and so can you. Here's a great safety tip.
Drone pilots, have a flight plan before flying. Picture this. You settle into your seat, buckle your seatbelt, and get comfortable for the flight ahead. The pilot's voice travels from the loudspeaker.
Good afternoon, folks, and thanks for joining us for today's flight. We're headed out west, maybe to Denver, maybe to LA. We'll see how it looks up there.
An airline pilot never flies without a plan. Neither should you. When you're preparing to fly your drone, a great place to start is the FAA's Before You Fly app. That's the letter B, number 4, letter U, fly. The app has interactive maps, information about nearby infrastructure, and lets you know whether or not it's safe to fly in the airspace. To learn more about the app and flying your drone safely, visit faa.gov/UAS.
Brian said this very well, but I can't say enough about how big of an impact we can have on young people just by sharing all the things we love about aviation.
That's one of the big reasons why the FAA values student outreach. We have an entire STEM outreach program, and basically FAA employees partner with schools and community groups to share what it's like to work in the aviation field. So here's Nate Morrissey. He's an aviation safety inspector at our Flight Standards District Office in Long Beach, California. Nate's a pilot, a flight instructor, and he's worked at the FAA for 14 years. And in addition to all of that, he regularly visits schools to talk with kids about aviation. Our producer, Dominique Gabrun, sat down with Nate and asked him what kinds of questions he gets from students.
When you get in front of groups of young people to talk about flying and about aviation in general, what advice would you give to a young person who wants to become a pilot?
Everybody thinks that this is just going to be a hurdle that they can't even imagine, but the barrier to entry on this, it's not terrible. I guarantee you have what it takes. It's not incredibly hard. And what I like to tell people is maneuvering the airplane is kind of a skill, and I don't want to take that away from anybody, but really what makes a good pilot, in my opinion, is the decisions they make. that is a majority of flying right there. It's knowing what decision to make and when to make it. Having the good frame of mind going, you know what, we're not going to continue down this path. We're going to turn around, or we're not even going to take off today. So if you got a good head on your shoulders, I guarantee you got what it takes to be a pilot or get into the aviation field. I just want people to understand that you can do this. It's not impossible. Trust me. If you knew me and most of the people I hang out with, we're not like the astronauts where it's the best of the best of the best. We're normal people, normal IQs and intelligence levels, and we were able to happen. We just were the ones that did it. Guys, I got to tell you out there, who's ever listening on the other end of this, you 100% could do this. I know you can. And once you get there, or at least do a discovery flight, you're doing more than most people on the planet could ever dream of. So just get out there and go do it, but rely on those resources. And in the show notes or something, put my email in there. I don't mind. Have them email me and go, hey, Nate, I got more specific questions. Or the great people that are putting this podcast together, we want to help you out. That'd be my biggest thing, like anything else in life. Don't think it's this huge barrier of entry and you don't have what it takes. Because for the most part, everybody has what it takes. They just got to find the route and the road to go down.
Nate's right. You know, John, I think for a lot of people, the most important first step is acknowledging that learning to fly a plane is possible. You can do it. We'll link some of the resources we talked about in the show notes for this episode. And for all of you out there listening to this episode, we hope that you take Nate's words to heart. You can do this.
And that's our show for today. The Air Up There is a podcast brought to you by the Federal Aviation Administration. You can follow the FAA on Twitter at FAA News and on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn at FAA. Thanks for listening. Happy landings. Hey, Allison, what's more fun than a day at the airport?
What, John?
Absolutely nothing, but aviation trivia is a close second.
Have you ever noticed air traffic control towers have angled glass windows near the top? Want to know why? Air traffic controllers working in control towers need to have constant visibility of the airfield at all times. The glass in the tower's windows are angled at precisely 15 degrees. This prevents glare and reflections that could block controllers' visibility of the full runway and tarmac.